the next major commodity opportunity may not be the resource the world needs most, or even the hardest one to find, but it could be the resource that governments, companies, and entire industries can't afford to lose access to. So in a world where economic security is becoming just as important as economic efficiency, that's the shift we're tracking, and we'll keep bringing you the specific projects and companies sitting at the center of it. For the last few decades, the global economy has run on a pretty simple idea: make things wherever they're cheapest and trade for everything else. If China can manufacture something for half the cost of making it in the US, why wouldn't American companies buy it from China? Now, that logic built one of the most interconnected economies in history, with raw materials from one country, components from another, final assembly somewhere else, and shipped across the world. Now, consumers got cheaper products, companies cut costs, and countries became increasingly dependent on one another. So for decades, that dependence was treated as a feature of globalization. But now that's changing. Governments are realizing the cheapest supply chain isn't necessarily the safest one. And here's why. The world spent decades optimizing purely for efficiency, and there's nothing wrong with that because it created enormous growth. But a system built for efficiency runs into trouble when the countries in that supply chain are also geopolitical rivals. So at that point, the question isn't just who's the cheapest supplier, it's can we actually depend on them? And we've already seen this play out with critical minerals. China didn't become dominant just because it has resources. It built the infrastructure to process and refine them, and that's where the real strategic power sits. You can have a copper deposit or a rare earth deposit inside your borders, but without processing capacity, you're still dependent on someone else. So according to the International Energy Agency's 2026 Global Critical Minerals Outlook, the average share held by the world's largest refining country controls an average of 70% of refined supply across key energy minerals. China dominates refining for most of these minerals. Indonesia dominates nickel. Copper is a good example of why mining and processing are two different games. Per the IEA, China has accounted for more than 90% of growth in global copper smelting since 2005, taking its share of smelting capacity from roughly 15% to about 50% by 2025. So even when copper is mined elsewhere, a huge share of the world's ability to refine it sits in China. Having the resource in the ground isn't the same as controlling the supply. We've already gotten a glimpse of that leverage in action. China has introduced export controls on rare earths and other critical materials as tensions with the US and others have escalated. The IEA's 2026 report notes the number of mineral tariff codes under Chinese export controls has tripled since 2023, turning what used to be a theoretical vulnerability into an immediate economic security problem. The agency estimates China's expanded rare earth restrictions could put roughly $6.5 trillion a year of downstream production at risk outside China, across autos, high tech, defense, and energy. Now that's the trade-off efficiency created. The more concentrated a supply chain gets, the more leverage it hands to whoever controls the bottleneck. It doesn't take a full export shutoff and even the possibility of restrictions to be enough to make manufacturers and governments rethink their sourcing. Because once the material can't easily be substituted, it stops being an economic issue and becomes a geopolitical one. So all of that information leads me to this point. Governments are behaving differently than they did a decade or two ago. The US is putting billions into domestic critical mineral and battery projects, using tariffs, financing, and other tools to pull supply chains out of China. Just last week, the current administration announced $3 billion in new critical mineral and battery investments, tied explicitly to defense supply chains and reducing reliance on China, on top of a broader $12 billion strategic mineral stockpile. Companies are shifting too. Reuters reported this month that Lockheed Martin is seeking domestic supplies of scandium and germanium for military technologies. One preliminary deal would source scandium from a planned Nebraska project alongside a separate push for domestic germanium used in military optics. So, what I'm getting at here is that these aren't companies chasing the cheapest material anymore. They're securing supply they can count on. And this is where free trade gets a little bit complicated. In theory, markets should decide where goods get produced. Capital flows to the most efficient producer, countries specialize, everyone benefits. Now, that logic holds up fine for a pair of shoes, but holds up a lot less well for the material that goes into a power grid, advanced electronics, or military hardware. National security doesn't care what's cheapest. The market wants efficiency. Governments increasingly want resilience, and that tension is the real story behind the tariffs, trade wars, and industrial policy headlines. So, we're not watching globalization disappear, we're watching governments change the calculation. For decades, the only question was, where can we get this the cheapest? Now, there's a second question sitting next to it. What happens if we can't get it? And once that question matters enough, governments start doing things that look economically irrational under a pure free trade model, like subsidizing domestic production, paying more for local suppliers, stockpiling materials, restricting exports, building new processing capacity, signing long-term deals with reliable partners. You get the point. Essentially, they're willing to trade some efficiency for security, and that diversification is not cheap. The IEA says new refining projects outside the dominant supplier can face capital costs 20% to more than 150% higher, with operating costs running about 50% higher on average, which is exactly why these supply chains got so concentrated in the first place. The market naturally pushes production towards the cheapest producer. Building an alternative is slower, harder, and more expensive. And governments may just decide that that cost is worth it anyway if it cuts their exposure to rivals. Here's where it gets interesting for resource investors. Commodity investing used to be mostly about supply and demand. How much does the world need? How much can producers supply? And what does it cost to extract? But if governments and companies are increasingly willing to pay a premium for secure supply, a new variable enters the picture, which is where the resource actually comes from. A copper deposit in a geopolitically reliable country isn't equivalent to the same copper somewhere else. A rare earth deposit isn't strategically useful if the material still has to be shipped elsewhere for processing. Location, infrastructure, ownership, and the relationships between the countries involved are all becoming part of the value. Practically, that means the projects worth watching are shifting. It's no longer just who has the biggest deposit, it's near-term producers in jurisdictions the US and its allies consider reliable. Canada, Australia, and a growing list of partners getting funded through mechanisms like the Defense Production Act, DOE loan guarantees, or direct offtake deals with the Pentagon. Projects with a domestic or allied processing step, not just a mine, but the refining and smelting downstream of it, are positioned to pick up that government backing, because processing is exactly the bottleneck China controls today. And companies with supply agreements already in place with defense contractors or manufacturers, like Lockheed's Nebraska Scandium deal, get a demand certainty pure spot market producers don't have. So overall, that's a meaningful shift for commodities because the resource itself doesn't need to get scarcer for its strategic value to rise. It can become more valuable simply because access to it has become more important. And that's something we do here at Natural Resource Stocks. As governments start treating copper, uranium, rare earths, and other critical materials as strategic assets rather than just commodities, the companies developing those resources become a much bigger part of the geopolitical equation. The question isn't just whether the world needs more of something. It's whether the world can secure enough of it from places it can trust. And there's one more piece worth flagging. If governments are willing to back projects that can't win on cost alone, the traditional commodity math starts to change. A project doesn't have to beat the world's cheapest producer if manufacturers, defense companies, or governments are willing to pay a premium for diversification through financing, offtake agreements, stockpiles, or tariffs. The market price may not tell the whole story anymore. Geopolitical value can start deciding which projects get built, sometimes ahead of ones that look better on a spreadsheet. So free trade isn't disappearing. Global trade is too deeply embedded in the modern economy to simply reverse, and there are still real benefits to producing things where they're most efficient. But the next major commodity opportunity may not be the resource the world needs most, or even the hardest one to find, but it could be the resource that governments, companies, and entire industries can't afford to lose access to. So in a world where economic security is becoming just as important as economic efficiency, that's the shift we're tracking, and we'll keep bringing you the specific projects and companies sitting at the center of it. For Natural Resource Stocks, I'm Tiffany Georgopoulos, and I'll see you next time.